Whole Hog Sports presents the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, the premier Arkansas hoops podcast, brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. With Whole Hog Sports basketball analyst Scotty Bordelon, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas is moving on in the NCAA tournament. The Razorbacks beat Vermont on Thursday night, 75-71 in the first round at KeyBank Center in downtown Buffalo. Arkansas now will play New Mexico State, a matchup that a lot of people didn't see coming in the second round. The Aggies beat UConn on Thursday. Tip-off for the game Saturday night is at 7:40 p.m. Central Time, and it will be televised on TNT. Matt Jones back in Fayetteville with Bob Holt of the Arkansas and Democrat Gazette and Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. They're both in Buffalo. They were at the game last night. Bob, Scotty, set the picture for us. What was it like being in the arena for that game between the Razorbacks and the Catamounts?
It was fun being down on the floor. I know last year with COVID, I didn't go to Indianapolis. One of the reasons was I knew the seating would be really bad. And I get why they did that, but it's like, I think you honestly could see the game better on TV. And we were on the second row, right by the Arkansas bench. So from my perspective, you know, I could see Eric, you know, working the refs and see the staff doing stuff and, you know, watch the players react coming in and out. And you obviously got a much better feel for the physicality on the floor and the athleticism. So that was one nice thing. And plus the fans were right behind us, and some of them were Razorback fans, some of them were Vermont fans. They were yelling all kinds of stuff. And that was kind of crazy. I mean, you felt like you were right in the middle of things, which was, you know, for me, was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yesterday, me and another guy on the beat, we went to the arena pretty early because just kind of wanted to take in, you know, just everything that was going on in KeyBank Center. And for the first session, so there were four games in the arena yesterday. And for the first session, the people who covered the teams in the second session, they don't get a seat assigned to them, you know, for the first two games. And so if media was allowed to go up to the hockey press box, which basically gave you a bird's eye view of everything going on. So I watched games up there. The first two, watched, you know, Richmond upset Iowa. That was a really interesting game. And then, you know, when that first session ended, moved down to the floor, and it's a completely different ball game when you're sitting, you know, I was like 6 feet away from Stanley Amude last night when he hit a three that I don't know that it necessarily sealed the game for Arkansas, but you know, you're kind of close enough to be able to tell that guys are playing with bounces in their step, and you can kind of see the looks and the body language that they're carrying with them. And it's really neat, and it's a very, very nice change of pace from, you know, where we're stationed in Bud Walton Arena, where we can't really see just a whole lot up close. Like, you can hear all the trash talk. I mean, I could have tweeted all night just about the different interactions between players that, you know, that's unique to us because we're, you know, normally not that far or normally not that close to the floor. So it was really unique. And you get to hear a lot of the communication, like Bob said, between the Arkansas staff and the players. Like, you could read the play on the whiteboard that was on the Arkansas bench. So you could see what set was coming, and you could just about hear everything Eric Musselman was saying to his guys and the officials and his coaching staff. So it was pretty neat. And this is my first tournament experience since 2018, and that was a pretty quick trip, but I feel like we're going to be staying here a little bit longer.
Yeah, definitely. They'll be in Buffalo through the end of the time at KeyBank Center. Arkansas and New Mexico State will play the final game in Buffalo this weekend. It was almost worst-case scenario for Arkansas. We talked in the podcast leading into the Vermont game that worst-case scenario is that J.D. Notte gets in foul trouble again and doesn't play well for them. And you know, you look over the last three games, all postseason games, counting the two that they played in Tampa at the SEC tournament, in the first half of those three games, he scored 7 points, seven personal fouls in about 35 minutes, has not played well before halftime, didn't score in the first half of the game against Vermont, comes back in the second half, plays really well, has 17 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists in 27 minutes. And he was really key to the Razorbacks pulling away, I thought, in the second half, because I don't know that a lot of people felt real good, even with that 7-point lead, about the Razorbacks, or at least how they had played in the first half, because of Notay and his foul trouble, and picks up his third foul early in the second half, and it's not looking too great as Vermont makes that big run.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, Arkansas was in a – it's never good when your leading scorer and your All-America guard just goes scoreless in a half. But I think it's really a credit to the complementary pieces that Arkansas had. Like Devo was terrific again. We'll probably talk about him, you know, more in depth later, but he was awesome. He had 10 points in the first half. Stanley Amude had 9. And Arkansas got contributions from Trey Wade. Like, he had a dunk. Jalen Williams hit a 3. Aldis Toney hit a 3. And Devo comes in and just kind of does what he does in March. Like, he's so, like, made for this moment. It's pretty remarkable. Like, he's done nothing but score in double figures on efficient shooting nights, you know, all 5 games that he's played in the NCAA tournament. But I think JD, you know, I will say this, like, I feel like a couple of the shots that he took early were kind of just like him settling into the game just a little bit. It took him longer, obviously, to settle in. But he, you know, I remember vividly, like, he drove to the rim going left, and he just kind of missed the layup. Like, that's a shot that JD makes, I feel like, 8 out of 10 times, and for whatever reason it just didn't fall. Maybe it was the early game jitters, you know, maybe just trying to find his offense a little. But I thought in the second half he was so much better getting downhill purposefully, you know, getting out in transition. I know he was really good on the defensive glass in the second half against Vermont, and I thought that allowed him to push the ball up the floor in transition better, kind of stretch his legs in the open floor. And that really got him going a little bit. I mean, I think Jimmy Dykes during the SEC tournament, he kind of said that, you know, JD Notae is in no way, form, or fashion LeBron James, but you can kind of see similarities in the way that they pick up a full head of steam with the ball in their hands in transition. And that really got JD going. I know he hit a big 3 from the left wing, but, you know, Eric Musselman told JD at halftime, he was like, he's just understanding that that's your All-America guard. Like, that's kind of the guy that makes your team go. And he told JD at halftime, he was like, look, man, you probably don't want to just kind of disappear from this, but even if you did, I'm not going to allow you, because we're still going to run all of our sets through you, and we're going to try to get you going, just because everybody in the building just knew how important JD was to Arkansas winning that game.
Stanley Amude finished with 21 points for the Razorbacks in his first NCAA tournament game. Scotty, you wrote about his play after the game last night, and Vermont's coach was really complimentary of how well he played. He said that he didn't look that big on film, I think, but he said, gosh darn, when you see him in person, he looks like a completely different player.
Yeah, Stanley looked every bit the pro on Thursday. I mean, he's got his 3-point shot really, really working for him right now. And I asked him after the game, I was like, you've hit 3 threes in 5 of your last 6 games, or you just seen a big rim? And he kind of gave a canned answer that, you know, his teammates are finding him in good spots, and coaches know how to get him the ball, you know, where he's most effective. And he's most effective from the left side of the floor. I don't think there's any doubt about that. In the left corner, left wing, along that left baseline, where he can, you know, work himself into that mid-range jump shot, kind of pogo stick into those shots where, you know, defenders just, they've virtually got no shot of contesting whatsoever. And it's kind of just, at that point, it's just make or miss from Stanley, you know, whether he's got his touch on that particular shot or not. But he was near flawless. And, he was playing in his first tournament game, but he did not look like a guy that was, you know, brand new to that stage. And I remember pretty clearly after the game, you know, he's jogging off the floor and toward Arkansas's tunnel, and he's got both of his arms raised, both index fingers pointed toward the rafters, and Arkansas fans that were behind Arkansas's bench, you know, they were cheering really loud for him, and cheerleaders were bouncing up and down. Like, that was kind of a fitting walk, like a fitting send off for Stan. I mean, he was the star, and Arkansas kind of would have been lost without him, you know, especially in that first half. He gave him 9 big points when JD was struggling. And I thought John Becker's quote about him not looking that big on film, I'm not sure, he must have been watching that film on like a 12-inch TV I mean, Stan is well put together. I mean, I don't understand that. But Stan, he also had a really, really big block. Probably the most emphatic one of the first day in Buffalo. And, you know, as much as, you know, we like to talk about Stan and the capabilities he's got as a scorer, that man is a menace on the defensive end. Just, he's so big on the ball, and his length and athleticism just really lend to, you know, him having big defensive rebounding nights. Like, he had a season high 9 defensive rebounds, those were enormous, just, you know, able to finish off the defensive possessions when Arkansas was able to get a stop at some key times. He's improved so much. And I really think Stan is the X factor for this Arkansas team, maybe along with Devo, just because, I mean, those Stan is just ultra talented. And you know, I think the national folks are finally starting to see that.
Amude finishes the game 6 of 11 overall, 3 of 4 from 3-point range, made all 6 of his free throws. Scotty mentioned 9 rebounds. He had 3 assists, 2 blocked shots. Bob, you had a chance to talk with him before the game about it being his first NCAA tournament game. What were your thoughts talking to him, and how did you feel his mindset was going into the game?
I think he was confident. I mean, even though Arkansas didn't play very well against Texas A&M and Tampa, he had a pretty good game. And, you know, he's playing well. And I think, you know, I need to look this up. How old he is, 22 or something probably. But, you know, fifth year as a college player, and that doesn't include a sit-out year. I mean, this is his fifth year of playing college ball. That was his 135th game last night. I know there's some guy at Iowa that's played like 170 or something, but I got to believe last night, that's if you'd ask Stan last spring when he committed to Arkansas, you know, what are you hoping for? It would be something like that. I mean, you have a real good year. You help your team get to the NCAA tournament, and then when you get there, you perform at a super high level. And he's like the team. You know, he kind of had some up and down games. I mean, he had a game where he didn't score, which was kind of shocking. But he's really got it going now. And, you know, he filled up the box score. He took a couple of rebounds away from Jalen Williams. I mean, they were elbowing each other. But I remember thinking, man, look at Stan. He's taking the ball away from Jalen, you know. And of all the things he did to fill up the box score, maybe the most impressive stat to me was a 0, which was turnovers. He had no turnovers in 40 minutes. And you think about how much he was handling the ball, you know, and that was a suit. And Arkansas as a team only had 5. That was matched the season long. That's the fewest they've ever had in an NCAA tournament game. They've played a lot of those, obviously, 60-something, I think, or close to 70. But he just really, you know, for a fifth-year guy, you know, that's what you'd like for his first tournament experience to be so epic on so many levels. And obviously they don't win that game without him.
You know, late in the regular season, Stan had a really big scoring game. I think he scored 23 points against LSU. And I remember asking Eric Musselman just about how Stan has grown, you know, on the offensive end, and just kind of become a guy that Arkansas feels comfortable going to late in games. And JD Notay kind of mentioned that too, like in crunch time, Arkansas, you know, they're going to go to him. They're probably going to put Stan, and especially when he's cooking, they're going to put him and JD Notay in those wing pick and rolls. And, you know, Stan's, you know, obviously got the option to pop to the top of the key or deeper into the corner, or he can sink down into that left short corner and, you know, get off a short mid-range jumper there where he really likes it. But I remember Eric Musselman saying that Stan was a guy that, you know, after the regular season finale against Tennessee, he said that they were going to put in more sets to get Stan shots, and because he's deserving of it. And I think late in the game, you know, when Arkansas was trying to milk the clock and kind of preserve their lead and maybe extend it a little bit, obviously they're trying to do that. But they go to that one set where they just wing pick and roll with JD and Stan, and it's probably your best two offensive weapons at this point. Have the those are the primary two options, and Stan is super deserving of that. And I think JD recognizes that Stan is the, you know, the scorer that he is, and especially when he's really rolling, he's a guy that really needs a bunch of touches late.
I thought one of the really big keys last night was the fact that Amude, JD Notay, and Audis Toney all played a significant amount of time in the second half with 4 fouls, and none of them fouled out. And Toney in particular, there were a couple of possessions. I think back-to-back possessions for Vermont within the final 2-3 minutes of the game, where Ben Shungu, who scores 20 points, a team high for Vermont, Tony locks him down defensively. I forced him into a shot when I think Vermont was trying to cut into a 4-point lead. Arkansas comes down, hits a couple of free throws. The next time down, Shungu drives to the basket and Tony knocks it out of bounds. It looked like it was off of Vermont, but after the replay review, it ended up staying with the Catamounts. But the ability to play with four fouls for those guys, and not just play with four fouls, but to be really impactful. Tony with his defense, Note and Amude with their scoring. I thought that was a really big key to the game last night.
Looking at the box score, four Hogs had four fouls, and Note got his third with like 18 something left, came out a little bit, but then he went back in. As we've talked about, it was very effective scoring. I mean, his shooting wasn't very good. I mean, but he scored, he got rebounds, he got assists, he hit clutch free throws, four out of four in the last, you know, one something, whatever it was. And the Arkansas, I don't think, scored a basket after like the 450 something. They hit eight out of 10 free throws. And that's kind of been their MO, is getting to the rim. And of course, Vermont was having a foul and there at the end. But yeah, I mean, those guys, they did a good job of negotiating the foul trouble, which was pretty epic. I mean, four guys with four fouls, and they all managed to finish the game. They were all key guys, obviously. And I thought they did a good job of playing, you know, with those fouls and not picking up a fifth one. There was a couple times late, Note was driving. I remember thinking, you know, I wonder if he's going to get a little too aggressive. Plus the rest, it seemed like they start calling the game tighter at the end, which seems to happen a lot. And I understand Arkansas fans look at it through rose-colored glasses, and, you know, Vermont fans are looking through green-colored glasses, I guess. But it did seem like they called some ticky-tack fouls there at the end. But, yeah. The Razorbacks did a great job of not having anybody foul out.
No, Audis, every night that Arkansas plays, he's going to get matched up with the opposing team's, you know, top playmaking backcourt guy. And there's going to be some stretches where, you know, plain and simple, like the offensive guy just kind of gets the best of you. And Ben Shungu, you know, he was pretty good. Like, late in the game, you know, Ryan Davis was Vermont's leading scorer for about three quarters of the game, and then he didn't take a shot the last 13 minutes. And so Arkansas did a good job limiting him. But Audis Tony, he also, like, he's going to get the other guy's best shot sometimes. But Audis is, he's a talented enough defender, long enough, athletic enough that, you know, he's gonna give, you know, those opposing guards fits. And it's just a kind of another case of, you know, just the value that Audis provides, you know, not only on the offensive glass at times too, with those putbacks and then cuts to the rim, but he's, you know, I would say that him and Stan are, you know, without a doubt, I think the two best wing defenders that Arkansas's got. And I don't think Eric Musselman wants to go battle with any other two guys than those two, especially when the other team's got some really, really good playmakers on the perimeter.
Earlier, we mentioned Devo Davis and the game that he had. He ends up scoring 14 points in 36 minutes off the bench. I have to believe that's the season high in terms of minutes played for him. If not, it has to be one of the top, just because he hasn't played that much this season. You know, going into this year, Davis and Williams were thought to be two of the faces of the program. And it was because of the way, I thought, that they played in Indianapolis last year. They really seemed like they grew up during that NCAA tournament run, and the wins over Texas Tech and Oral Roberts, and even the game against Baylor that they lost in the Elite Eight. And to me, Bob, it sure looked like that experience last year kind of paid off for those two last night. They were really steady. They didn't let the moment get too big for them. Mentioned Davis had 14 points. I think Arkansas outscored Vermont by 12 when he was in the game in the first half alone. They end up outscoring Vermont by 9 when he was on the floor for the entire game. Jalen Williams gives him another double-double, 13 points, 10 rebounds. It just seemed to me like the experience that those two had last year was a real big deal in the game last night.
Yeah, Devo's Mr. NCAA tournament. He had, of course, everybody remembers the big shot, game-winning shot he hit against Oral Roberts to get you know, Arkansas to the Elite Eight. And he played real well last year in the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament. And yeah, I think that experience does help. He obviously played starter minutes. I mean, I just kind of look at him as another starter. And he didn't play. I'm not exactly sure what the deal was, but when Tony was hurt and couldn't play at Tennessee, you know, Devo started and it just didn't go real well for him. And then I don't think he had a particularly good game against LSU in the SEC tournament, only played a few minutes, but then I think he played pretty well against A&M. He helped him in that game, so he could kind of seem to get his groove back. But yeah, he just seems to be a guy that, you know, when the NCAA tournament's here, I mean, he's averaging 14, 15 points in NCAA tournament games. It's not a small sample size. It's five games now. And they really needed him last night because when Note got in foul trouble, you know, didn't score in the first half, well, Devo scored 10. I mean, he picked up the slack big time. And he also had, you know, some steals and some assists, some rebounds. He always gets rebounds because he's such a good rebounding guard for his size. And, yeah, and Jalen, you know, a little bit of a slow start. He missed a couple free throws late that was a bit of a surprise, but I think he probably was pretty tired too. But, yeah, another double-double. He really came through. And of course, you know, JD played in the NCAA tournament last year too. And you think about that Baylor game, I think JD scored like 14 points in 14 minutes. And speaking of foul trouble, fouled a lot of that game. You wonder what would have happened. I'm not saying Arkansas would have beaten Baylor, but you wonder how that game might have been different if JD hadn't fouled out in 13 or 14 minutes or whatever it was. So, yeah, I think Arkansas's NCAA tournament experience definitely came into play. And you got to remember that Trey Wade played in the NCAA tournament at Wichita, and Chris Likes didn't play a lot last night, but he played in the NCAA tournament as a freshman at Miami, and he had two big free throws after Jalen Williams drew his 50th charge of the season. It's just kind of wild to think 50 charges, but yeah, I think Arkansas's NCAA tournament experience, and also Eric's an experienced NCAA tournament coach now. You know, he took Nevada to the Sweet 16, took Arkansas to the Elite Eight. I think he's, you know, if you count last year, 3-1, now he's 4-1 his last five NCAA tournament games. I mean, so Eric, you know, I think he's ready for these moments too.
It was really neat to listen to Eric talk about, I think he was asked about Stanley and just asked about what Stanley's demeanor and his focus was like, you know, maybe in the buildup to the games, maybe in the couple of days before. And Eric said he didn't really know what to expect from Stan, you know, with it being his first tournament experience, whether he'd be just kind of too amped up or, you know, just nervous and a little bit anxious. But he said he went to bed Wednesday night with a feeling and very confident that, you know, Devo, JD and Jalen were going to have big games. And I think that's, you know, you never want to jinx a guy or anything like that, like I'm capable of doing that. But, you know, it's kind of, we're kind of becoming accustomed to Devo just rising to meet the moment in these big games. And, you know, he's played five NCAA tournament games now. He's shooting 54%, averaging 14 points, and he's made at least six shots in all five of those games. And so he's been really, really good. And maybe he's just taking advantage of guys, you know, on the defensive end that, you know, maybe don't want to maybe risk getting into foul trouble. And maybe he's just taking advantage of maybe a little bit of a lack of aggressiveness, maybe in some sequences, because I know Devo got into the lane several times for some really, really clean looks in the lane, knocked those down. And then he, you know, I knew he was cooking last night when he had a turnaround jumper on the baseline, like right in front of me. It was beautiful. Like that's Devo right there when he's at his best. And he got out and ran a little bit. I think about the only thing that he didn't really, I think about the only mistake he made, maybe outside of a questionable shot or two, which I thought his shot selection was solid, but he maybe was thinking a little bit too much on the break. But anytime Devo's on the break, you know, you never kind of know what's going to happen. But more often than not, Devo's going to give you a bucket and kind of stabilize you in a hectic sequence.
Scotty, did you notice at the end of the game last night there was the outlet pass from Williams to Devo?
I did, and I saw another Vermont player try to stop it from happening. Yeah. And I was kind of – I don't know. If Devo would have dunked that one, he would have had more merch to sell.
Seems like that's kind of become the hallmark of every big Arkansas win is the outlet pass to Davis at the end of the game. The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America is brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. Visit their showroom at 411 South Metro Parkway in Rogers or online at LandersToyotaNWA.com.
For all your automotive needs, shop Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers, where we guarantee you the best buying experience and best service after the sale in Arkansas. Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Bob, I'm sure you've seen this with how many NCAA tournaments you've covered, but it seems like oftentimes within a building, the upset bug just kind of starts to bite, and maybe the teams that play later in the day feed off of what has happened earlier in the day in that building. And you look at Buffalo yesterday in game one, South Dakota State took Providence down to the wire in a 13-4 game. In game two, Iowa gets upset by Richmond in a 5-12 game. And then, of course, in game three, New Mexico State beats UConn in a 5-12 game. And so, you know, you're wondering how well is Arkansas going to play? You know, is Vermont feeding off of the energy that the underdogs have had earlier in that day? And but it just sure felt like something was in the air yesterday in Buffalo. And then for Arkansas to move on was a really notable thing.
Yeah, it was definitely a case of upset fever in Key Bank Center. And you have to give Arkansas credit for, I mean, you look at what happened to Kentucky. You know, we were watching the end of that game on the big screen. I think I did something to my neck looking, trying to look up to watch the video. But that was just shocking. I mean, for St. Peter's to beat Kentucky, I mean, in my mind, Kentucky should not have been a 2-seed. They should have been a 3-seed. Tennessee should be a 2-seed, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, you just look around the country and see the upsets. And then right there in Buffalo, and it was kind of hard to tell. But normally, you know, Vermont's not super far away. I mean, it's about a 7-hour drive from here, and Arkansas is obviously not close. And they generally, fans generally matriculate to the underdog. But Eric Musselman's essentially running for mayor of Buffalo with all these T-shirts. He has the lacrosse team T-shirt now, too. And so I think, you know, it was fans want to see a good game. That was a good game. But you know, the main thing, the first games, you know, Nolan Richmond always said that was the hardest one to get by, you know, and I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know, because a lot of times you're playing a team that you don't obviously haven't had that much time to prepare for. It's not a conference game where you know these teams real well. There's all the pressures on the high seed. You know, it's not an 8-9 game or a 7-11 game. It's a, you know, if Arkansas had lost again, it would have been a huge upset. And obviously, Iowa went through that. UConn went through that. Kentucky, some other teams went through that. And so, yeah, I think it's says a lot about Arkansas to avoid that upset bug and be moving on.
Scotty, you were sitting courtside for that New Mexico State UConn game. You saw Teddy Allen score 37 points for the Aggies. What are your thoughts about New Mexico State and how Arkansas matches up with the Aggies in round number two?
That was maybe the most incredible performance I've been that close to. And I mean, I'm really young and I haven't been to a whole lot of these, but it's probably going to take a lot to kind of top the, I mean, Teddy Allen, was, I mean, he was heroic. And I was sitting to my right was a New Mexico State beat writer. And I think even he was in a little bit of disbelief at what Teddy Allen was doing. I mean, he finished with 37. I think he scored the Aggies last 15 points and maybe 18 of their last 21 overall. He was remarkable. And I went back and kind of watched on YouTube TV. I watched the last about maybe minute of that game. And, you know, New Mexico State's up 3 with about 30 seconds left. And he goes in and finishes an and one to put him up 5. And before he goes to the free throw line, he hops up real quick and he runs over to kind of the outskirts of the playing floor right in front of the media seat. He was actually standing right in front of Jeff Goodman and he screamed, "It's over, twice. I mean, he's kind of spitting on everybody. Sweat's flying everywhere. It's kind of part of the experience, right? It makes it fun. But he's made for that. And after the game, he said that Chris Jans told his players in the huddle in one of the late game timeouts that he was going to find out whether or not his team was soft in the Aggies or not. And especially Teddy Allen, if you read anything about his story, I mean, that kid is the, he is the exact opposite of soft, and he plays like it. Like I was talking to Curtis Wilkerson, who's on the beat too. We were texting back and forth during the game, just about Teddy Allen. And we both said that he kind of reminded us a little bit of the pre weight loss Mason Jones, just kind of really wired to score, can really just about do anything on the offensive end, kind of automatic from the free throw line, can get his own shot just about whenever he wants. And they play with an edge. Like some people, I know Brad Nessler wasn't like the biggest fan of the kind of the antics. I don't even know if antics is the right word, because Teddy just showed so much personality, and he's, to some people, he's probably brash, but that's just kind of who he is. That's what makes him the player he is. And, you know, outside of him, they've got some really tough front court guys. And I think the guy that, you know, might be the key to, you know, Arkansas, you know, beating New Mexico State is, you know, they've got to keep number 10, Jabari Rice, kind of in check. He's like in the starting lineup, he's probably their point guard. But Teddy's gonna run the show more often than not. But Jabari Rice hit some really big shots, and he's kind of another emotional leader for them. So Arkansas's got their work cut out for them. The Aggies are kind of playing with a little bit of magic too, and they probably kind of feel on top of the world after taking down UConn almost in their backyard.
Yeah, I agree. There may be some Arkansas fans that look at that and say, "Oh gosh, now we don't have to play UConn. What a break!" And now we're booking flights to San Francisco for the Sweet 16. Well, no, I mean, New Mexico State's got a really good record. They're used to winning, and they had a great game, and they've got a special player. You know, listen to what Scotty was saying, and, you know, watching Teddy Allen, you know, just as a player and as a personality, kind of reminds me of Marshall Henderson, who was at Ole Miss. People remember him. Great scorer. Pretty flamboyant, rubbed some people the wrong way, but he led Ole Miss to an SEC tournament title. I mean, think about that for a minute, SEC tournament title for the Rebels. So the skill set and the flamboyance reminds me of that. And I was just amazed the way he was shooting free throws late in the game. It's just like he was in his backyard, you know, messing around playing horse or something. He just looked so relaxed. And there was, I don't remember how many seconds were left, but the Mexico State had the lead. And Allen came down, you think, well, okay, he's going to work the clock, make him foul him, because he just looks so automatic. He just takes the ball right to the hole and scores, of course. And then they show the Mexico State coach over on the sideline. He's laughing. He's not smirking or smiling. He is laughing. And I think he said after the game, I'd have to look up the exact quote, but it was something like, that's one of those plays where, you know, you're going, no, okay, great, awesome, great play, you know. But obviously Allen has a green light, you know, probably the biggest green light in the NCAA tournament. And I think it'll be a handful for Arkansas. You know, guys like that get hot. You know, you never know what can happen. My guess is at least Tony would guard him. That would be a really interesting matchup.
It was crazy. Teddy goes for 37. And then the guy that I mentioned, Jabari Rice, he was New Mexico State's second leading scorer. He had 9. And so Arkansas is going to game plan for Teddy Allen. There's no doubt about it. But I think maybe the key is, you know, limiting some of those complementary pieces, which is kind of like, that's kind of, you know, probably the game plan when a lot of teams play Arkansas too. But that's a team that's, you know, really tough. And, you know, looking at their KenPom page, you know, they don't do just a whole lot well. I mean, they're a pretty good defensive team, and they're top 75 nationally in terms of defensive efficiency and top 35 in 2-point field goal percentage and 3-point field goal percentage against. So, and that's against, you know, not the greatest of competition. Throughout the year, they do have a win over Davidson. They did beat Indiana State, New Mexico from Eric's old conference too. So that's a team that's not going to come into Saturday night scared of Arkansas by any means.
But I do think you have to agree that if you were to ask most fans, if you were to ask Arkansas's coaches, who would you rather match up with, New Mexico State and UConn, I think everybody would pick, or most people would pick, New Mexico State. I can't remember who it was, but one of the main national people in the days leading up to the tournament said that they thought UConn was a potential sleeper pick for the Final Four. And so for New Mexico State to knock them out, I think that was a real big moment in the West region. The winner of Saturday's game between New Mexico State and Arkansas will play in the Sweet 16, as Bob mentioned, against either Gonzaga or Memphis. We'll have another podcast before then. We'll either be recapping the Arkansas season, or we'll be looking ahead to their matchup in the Sweet 16. Go to WholeHogSports.com this weekend for all of Bob and Scotty's coverage from Buffalo. They've been doing a great job. Also, Charlie Cajo, our photographer up there, doing a great job as well. Hope you'll come by our website and see all of that. You can also listen to the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. Just search Whole Hog Radio, that's three words, WHOLEHOGRADIO, on Apple, Spotify, or most other podcast stores. Darren Hedrick, the voice of the Kentucky Wildcats, is the guest on the baseball podcast this week with me and Bubba Carpenter as we look ahead to the SEC opener between the Razorbacks and the Wildcats this weekend at Baumwalker Stadium. We also have Paul Boyd in Austin, Texas this week. He'll be covering the Razorback women's team in the NCAA tournament. They'll play Utah on Friday afternoon in the first round. Again, go to WholeHogSports.com before, during, and after all the games for all of our basketball and baseball coverage. For Bob Holt and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.